So, who are you, and what do you work on? Where are we?
Well, hello, I'm Doug Hodges. I'm the original architect for the Visual Studio IDE.
Is that also referred to as the shell?
Yeah, Visual Studio, the main shell for the Visual Studio product. All the language products that plug in are all plugging into the IDE, the Integrated Development Environment.
What's your exact title?
So I'm software architect, principal architect for the Visual Studio IDE.
The IDE.
At least that's what I call myself.
And we're in Building 41, which is kind of the home of Visual Studio.
Yeah, Building 41 in Redmond, Washington.
And so Jason Weber tells me that he refers to you as the grandfather of Visual Studio Shell.
I prefer to consider myself the father, not the grandfather.
So he said he prefers you to be, you like to consider yourself the cool uncle. You said that before?
I've been on this product and this goal, this vision to create this integrated, extensible IDE from, well, starting back in the Visual Studio 5.0 time frame. So,
what year was that, do you recall, for those that didn't use Visual Studio back then?
So it would have been around 97, I think.
97.
Yeah, Visual Studio 97 was that.
Yeah.
First product. And back then I was the architect on creating Visual InterDev. And we actually started the effort in 95 when Microsoft changed to focus its efforts on addressing the web. Mm-hmm. And we took my product that was, I was actually part of the Access development team. And we were working on a future version of Access that was going to be based off of component technology. We had a new component-based forms package that ultimately became Internet Explorer, as you know today. Mm-hmm. We had the database design tools, which were a component, that ultimately now became the database design tools you see in Visual Studio today. And I was on a team that was supposed to take these components and repackage and rebuild a product that would be Access, the follow-on, the successor to Access 2 at the time. Mm-hmm. I was an original member of the COM team, Ole team, mm-hmm. and so we had started with a COM-based strategy for how you could integrate components. And so when we had the new charter to build a tool to address development for the web, we created this Visual InterDev product. We took my team and another team that was doing development tools for Blackbird, which was, it was called Blackbird, it was for the MSN, and we formed us together to create Visual InterDev. And we had the choice of how do we build this tool. You know, at that time, you know, there was one tool for VB, one tool for VC, so we, at the time, we thought that the VC code base was going to be the code base that was going to evolve forward to get to an integrated shell. So we built our first version of that Visual InterDev product in the VC code base, and I re-hosted those same components, the forms package for HTML design and database tools in the VC5 shell. And that was the start of our component, our COM interfaces that you see actually still existing today. Then in the, at that time, it was the vision of this division to create a one common IDE for all language products, all tools. We had, a separate VB at that time, and then we had VC, VJ, and Visual InterDev in the MS Dev shell, the VC-based shell. And it was based off of an MFC, derived from MFC-based classes, implementation, C++ implementation framework. And we were trying to have a third-party extensibility program, like the VSIP program of today. And we found that, that wasn't going to work very well unless everyone gave us their source code that we could build it in our build lab. Because anytime we changed something in a base class, you had to recompile the world.
And
so that just wasn't going to work to have a third-party extensibility program.
Define for people what VSIP stands for so everybody knows.
Well, that's actually stand for different things at different times. Visual Studio Integration Program.
Partner.
And now it became Visual Studio Industry Partner Program. Mm-hmm. what is the current term now?
Pick whatever, both.
Yeah. So, I refer to it as the integration API for Visual Studio and the program that surrounds it.
And the program is usually something where partners pay to have co-marketing, co-cooperation. There's like,
exactly.
It's like you become a partner with Visual Studio.
And you get co-marketing benefits and helping mm-hmm. release your product. You have NSDN Flash and other announcements of your products, you get the benefit of reaching the millions of customers of Visual Studio for your extension products. We wanted to have that type of program back in '95,
right.
And when we first did it with a few pilot partners, we found it wasn't going to work. It wasn't going to scale based off of that style of component development, based off of MFC implementation inheritance. So then in the 6.0 timeframe, Visual Studio 6.0 timeframe, I started this new shell, and the whole strategy was based on a COM-based component architecture that could allow independently built things that version independently of each other to plug together. And so in our first version, we took the VJ product, or J++, whatever they called it at the time, and the Visual Internet product, and we took those two products out of the MS Dev shell, and they were the first two products to integrate into this new IDE that we created.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that time, it looked like we took a step backwards, because we went from two shells, one for VB and one for Vid VJ VC, and then in the 6.0 timeframe, we moved to three shells, one for Vid VJ, one for VB, and one for C++. But that was a stepping stone to get us to the goal of the division, to have a single shell, which we achieved in the Visual Studio 2002 timeframe, or Visual Studio 7 timeframe.
So at this stage of the game, when you're building this third but new one, how are you thinking about extensibility? Is it mostly around how certain partners in the VESA program... anybody can do anything they want anytime?
No, the shell was designed to be fully extensible from the ground up, and designed to allow independent pieces that built independently plug together. We designed from the beginning first to, we had all our existing products internally, and so we had a great spec. We wanted to be at least as usable as the VB product and the VC product combined, and we picked and choose the best features from those two products. But we wanted to meet the extensibility requirements of how those independent teams, the VB team, the VC team, the Visual Internet team, at this point now were customers of mine. Their products had to plug into this combined IDE, as well as planning for the requirements of third party. It was designed from the beginning to be a fully extensible shell, and we felt that if we could meet the requirements of VB and VC, that we together would probably meet the requirements of most language partners.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course you had to try to anticipate the kinds of other products that could be built, like what you see today in Team System or Server Explorer for database development and other things. But yeah, it was. The goal from the beginning was to be extensible, and we were targeting. Oops. How do you hang up the phone?
I'll just let it ring.
Okay, sorry about that. So we were targeting. Can we let the phone ring?
That'll do.
I'll call you back. So we were. Actually, I forgot where it was. What was that? What was the question?
Well, one of the questions I was leading to, I think, that relates to it is. You're targeting both languages to be integrated as well as UI tool components.
Yeah.
Right? And they're both sometimes a little bit separate from each other. You might have one company that wants to build a new language, COBOL or something, another company that has like a tool set that's for a specific vertical market, and they want to resell that integrated into Visual Studio. Is that?
Well, yeah, and it's trying to get to, cover the full life cycle of development site life cycle and tools to assist in not just code development but testing and deployment and servicing and source control, analysis.
The companies that did stuff for the beginning, where they're like basically partners, they got access to the team. Didn't scale to this mass audience. It was more handpicked.
So, yeah, originally. So these were the same APIs we used to build our own products, and we opened it up to a select program that you could pay, and it originally cost $10,000 to join this program. Mm-hmm. And so those were the high-end ISVs at the time, and very much a high-end C++ programmer audience. And so the priority was given on power and the ability to do features, not necessarily on prioritizing on making it easy and accessible. At that time, we had no official VS SDK team, I would beg and borrow wherever I'd get resources to help write a sample here or write some documentation there. Originally, someone would need to write a feature in the shell. I'd help them with a little bit of planning their product, and they would write a sample in return for me. And so that's some of those original samples that we had were really just picked in part, came from different sources, and no consistent, team owning and delivering that SDK. And it cost $10,000 to get access to it, and so it was a very small program at that time. Whereas another aspect of extensibility, though, is add-ins and the automation object model, and that was in the product from the beginning. In every box of Visual Studio, you had the wizards, and you needed to write add-ins, and you could write a lot of certain kinds of extensibility right in the box. Mm-hmm. And that was free, and that was targeted more toward VB-level languages. So it was an automation-based object model, so it was easy to use from languages like VB or you could also from C++. But you were limited in the kind of features you could implement.
Right.
There. So it was the kinds of things you could do by adding commands or adding tool windows, hooking to certain events and reacting to them. But you couldn't implement a whole language. You couldn't implement a new debug engine because you have a new custom runtime.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when you needed to access to the lower level API. And originally, like I say, it cost $10,000 to have access to it.
Did they get code as well as help? Was there a kind of an SDK for Visa? Folks?
There was very little bit of an SDK. There was originally there was the set of samples I could scrounge together by begging and borrowing, and we had some PSS people come and help us write some samples. There was all the building tools you needed, the idle files and the .h files and the libs and the other related tools that you needed. There wasn't a nicely packaged SDK experience at that time.
Did you end up working in some capacity with most of the early Visa folks? You knew them in some way, whether it was just email or them a demo?
I worked with a lot of them. We started way back having these developer labs. We'd bring partners in-house for week-long developer labs. And those started out way back in the 2002 time frame. So originally, that first version of the shell that was in the VS6 time frame that had just Vid and VJ inside of it, that was not yet open. So we did not expose the extensibility API. And we had a couple internal teams write some things. I think someone from the SQL division wrote something for natural language query feature or something. So it was in the 2002 timeframe. We basically had developer labs where we could bring the few partners, the initial partners, in house, they got a lot of hand holding at that time.
How many times have you given the overview presentation for Visual Studio Accessibility?
Yes, I can't count. Practically every developer lab, we started out that way with my overview presentation. I'm not sure. 100.
Yeah, exactly. So where are we today? How did we get to where today?
That first version, we achieved our goal to have a single integrated IDE in 2002. We shipped the 2003 and now 2005, and we're working on Visual Studio Orcus. So what's that? Four versions where we've been able to enhance and refine the product and the new scenarios, new extensibility. And it's a very, very mature platform now.
So a few things happened over the last several years. One is there was a level for VSIP where it was less than $10,000,
that's exciting.
Late last year, the VS SDK became free, so that anyone could basically download the SDK and extend Visual Studio, they don't necessarily have the co-marketing or complete technical support access, but yet it's free, so anyone can do it.
Yeah. No, that's really cool. Yeah, that. So the from a technology point of view, the free level, which I guess we call affiliate level, has the full access to all of the technology. And then the additional, there's two levels, paying levels above that, that add additional program and marketing benefits. The reach and when we went public with the SDK, there's been many, many downloads of that technology, and which also then raised the priority to not just worry about C++ programmers that have direct contact to dev labs and hand-holding for Microsoft. We needed to start focusing on the accessibility of the SDK and the accessibility, how easy it is to do that development, and so that's been a major goal over the recent years to try to improve the quality of our SDK. And we've developed actually a team to actually own that release of an SDK, and it's been a major improvement.
We kind of have two groups of folks out there: the Visa, the partners that are actually part of the program, they're extending Visual Studio usually to make a product that they either resell or use within their enterprise. And now this new group that we're cultivating called VSX, standing for VSX Extensibility, which are essentially non-partners who are using the free VS SDK. And that's a fairly new thing. Is this something that you had envisioned a long time ago, where you just see .NET developers, Visual Studio developers coming in and building all kinds of stuff now for CodePlex or other?
Well, it's an exciting development, the original goal of focusing on the high end ISVs, shaped the style of API we have, and so it was, like I said, it was targeted at power and making things possible, and now that we have been able to release the technology free to everyone, we need to greatly improve our the level of abstraction and the ease of development for some of these scenarios. And it's something that I can't say I originally thought that we would have that available. In the beginning, when I had a basic myself and a program manager trying to run a program which doesn't scale well. But now that we have a full, product unit around, managing and growing this partner program, it's really exciting, and I hope that that it goes and develops really well.
You were touching on ease of use. So as well as adding functionality and capability to the Visual Studio extensibility and the VS SDK, it's also around making what's there easier to access, right? Whether it's simply better docs, simply better samples, or better wrapper classes that get you in, or wizard-type functionality, right?
Right. Yeah, so the first thing that made it easier was finally delivering the ability to use managed code to write these extensions. When we first shipped the extensibility and the IDE and the extensibility SDK, it only was usable by C++ programs or programmers. We shipped both Visual Studio 2002 and 2003 that way, and then we realized, lots of people are going to want to write in managed code, write in C#, write in VB, and write extensions for Visual Studio. And so we did what we called the Everett Extras release. Everett was the code name of Visual Studio 2003, and so we had an Everett Extras SDK release that was an add-on to the previously shipped Visual Studio 2003 SDK that delivered the minimal pieces you needed to be able to write in managed code. So it gave you the interop assemblies that expressed our COM interfaces in managed code, a redistributable MSI that you could use to install those assemblies, and then the beginning of a helper framework, and that you could use as some helper classes to begin to write something. That was really thin, and we put a lot of effort and massively grew those helper classes into what we now call the managed package framework in the Visual Studio 2005 release. So we continue to build and always provide the interop assemblies And one of the things that's always been really important to me was designing the API to take into account that different extensions, different companies will work at different times and different release schedules, and so that addressing versioning has been a particular focus. And so a lot of effort has been spent in trying to maintain compatibility across all versions of Visual Studio. It's always the expressed goal to maintain compatibility. And the API is designed in a fashion that you could write a single extension that runs in Visual Studio 2003, 2002, 2005, and Visual Studio Orcus with a single binary, depending on what you're trying to do. More realistically, between Visual Studio 2005 and Visual Studio Orcus that we're working on now, that's going to be, I think, really popular, to be able to write a single binary that can run in both versions. And so so part of what we do is we make a big effort to not change or break the compatibility of any previously shipped interfaces. Uh-huh. And so and then we create the new API in a way that it's defined in a new assembly, in a new file, that you can see what's new in the new version, as well as if you need to, we provide the redistributable that lets you install the interop assemblies for the new interfaces on a down-level machine, so that if you write a package that depends on new features, and when you run in the new version, you can take advantage of the new features, but that same binary can run a down-level, and then, you know, query interface or query service for an API and see, oh, it's not there, I'll dummy down and work without it. Mm-hmm. So you can write that kind of thing. And so that's been, that's particularly interesting to professional high-end, product development, where, partners who release VSIP products that want to maybe address more than one version of Visual Studio. Right. I think someone writing a tool for himself, mm-hmm, probably is not going to worry about that. Right. They're going to be just focusing on one version of Visual Studio, and hopefully that's as easy as possible to do that.
What are the key prerequisites for someone? Let's say they want to download the VS SDK, they have Visual Studio 2005. Do they need to know a little bit about COM interop, a little bit about anything else? Because there's still parts of the shell that are pure COM, and then the managed package framework helps a .NET developer access.
Yeah, so we have this managed package framework that covers and abstracts, let me say, 30%, 40% of our API. And so if you're staying within that subset, you can see what looks like a .NET experience when writing a .NET framework experience for writing your extension. If you are doing something like writing a language or interacting with them, there's so many features. But if you're creating many things, you're going to come upon areas that aren't yet abstracted and covered in the managed package framework. And then, yes, you will need an understanding of COM interfaces. And unfortunately, COM interop, there's several places in the API where you're going to encounter an int pointer, and then you're going to have to deal with the Marshall class to deal with marshalling an int pointer into an object or a string or an integer as necessary. And,
we have sample classes.
We have samples for those, and hopefully that when you hit one of those areas, then you can find a sample that does something like it, so you can copy from it. And that's one of those areas that we hope to improve the coverage of the MPF and other techniques to eliminate those places where you have to directly code to a COM interface that was originally designed for a C++ programmer and is rather awkward to do from a managed language.
One of the things we've seen recently is the community doing a bunch of cool stuff that basically build on top of the SDK. For instance, the VS SDK Assist project in CodePlex, you've seen the demo of that recently.
That looks really cool. That looks really awesome.
How would you describe it? It's something that assists people that use the SDK to help.
Yeah, so it's leveraging the guidance automation toolkit that was developed in combination with Visual Studio people and the PAG.
Patterns and Practice.
Patterns and Practice group. And it's a really cool, it's a factory, it's a wizard, it's on steroids. I mean, you can start with like a new project wizard that starts you off with writing something for Visual Studio extensibility, but it doesn't drop you off when the wizard is done. Give you, it's like fine-grained points to launch wizards to add additional features to extend your product and give you guidance on what's next, gives you help on you know, if this is what you're looking to do, here I can help you do it. And it's something, it's a direction that I think is fantastic, and I'd love to see that grow.
One thing that I noticed in that demo is that at runtime, after you've run the wizard and stuff, it doesn't require any components. It's just generating some code in the right places that just use the VS SDK and the extensibility APIs. So there's nothing at runtime you need. It's just all helping you assist learn. Like if you want to have a tool window and a button, here's how you would glue those together.
Yeah, and it knows about editing the five places you have to edit. You know, this file over here, that file there, that file. And with one UI sequence, it takes care of making all those edits. But you're right, it's not a new runtime that you need to install to use. It actually generates the code for you.
What are some things that developers might be capable of doing typically if they were to download the VS SDK? You know, things like, you know, they can create services, but there's tools windows, there's menu buttons. You can even just have a simple thing where there's something on a menu and you launch your own application. What kind of things can they hook into? Where would you like to see the community?
Well, so you start off with the first simple thing is adding a command on a menu or toolbar, that command can sense the selection of what's currently selected and then do some action, and then maybe then the next thing is showing some UI in a tool window, so like say you have your own kind of code review tools. And you have your own tool window to show the results of the code review, and your command launches your code review based off what's the currently selected text file or code file, and then presents results in a window. Now, incidentally, that level of extensibility where you're adding commands and adding tool windows, that's something you can also do through add-ins, mm-hmm. and the extensibility that's been in the product for free from the beginning, in many ways, it's easier to use add-ins, I don't want to discourage people from using add-ins. It's a great thing to do. There are some subtle features that you can't get to when you're doing it, if you're doing a tool window, for example, through an add-in that you get if you do it at the package level. So for example, one of the features normally of a tool window is if the user shows a tool window and then shuts down, the next time they launch Visual Studio, the tool window automatically reappears.
Something that becomes native to their development experience.
Right, but if you do it as an add-in, you don't get that feature.
Yeah.
You know, so in some ways it feels second class in that sense. It doesn't behave identically like every built-in feature. Whereas if you do it the packet, I mean, we wrote our features by writing packages. Yeah. And another thing is add-ins are controlled through the add-in manager, where the user can load and unload and turn on and off add-ins. So in some cases, you don't want to think of your product as something the user can turn off. It's just part of the product once they install it. And that's one difference.
And some of the key areas that people can do are like, you know, tool windows. They can extend project types.
So let me go on. Yeah. So then the next thing is there's lots of interesting cases where you have your own custom file type. In many cases, those will be XML-based formats, and so you have your own custom XML format that you would like to write a unique designer UI experience for it. Mm-hmm. That's a great scenario. So I call that in the general category of writing a custom editor or designer.
Well, I a couple years ago, I'd worked on the sponsoring the XML editor that Shipton would be.
Oh.
Chris Lovick created that, right?
So, I'm glad you did that. It's a great feature.
And so that's one major example, right? Because it's actually it was built around the stuff we're talking about, right?
Yeah. So
external team, external pieces.
Yeah, and it is designed with extensibility where you can just write an XSD schema, mm-hmm. Extended XSD schema, and you get IntelliSense for your XML right out of the bat. And then in addition, you might want to have a custom UI experience that think of it as the view design versus view code for your XML file. That's where you're going to drop down and use the vSIP SDK to right. write that custom designer UI.
And when you say vSIP SDK, you're also referring to packages VS and VS SDK with packages, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I still use the word vSIP interchangeable sure. for VS SDK. And then other scenarios are extending projects in other ways. So there's a rather advanced point of extensibility that we have, which we call project subtypes or project flavors, where if you have some of the places where we use this ourselves is there's a project type that lets you build assemblies that run on a smart device, Pocket PC or such. So there's you don't have just a regular VB project or a C# project. You have a project that knows it's building code for a device. It adds extra features that are unique to device development. So, for example, it gives you the emulator, and you can run your code in the emulator. It knows about an extra deploy step that after you build your assembly, it has to deploy it down to the device through, the communication cable. And then it knows how to launch that application under a debugger appropriate for running under the device version of the runtime compact framework. So that's an example where we've used a project subtype to extend the regular VB or C# project system to do this scenario of device development.
Would you say that rather than in that case in creating a whole new custom project type, it was kind of like inheriting from VB and C# projects
right, right.
and adding what it needs to for that custom behavior
exactly.
in addition to the basic VBC sharp stuff.
Yeah, so it's the COM equivalent of subclassing, if you will. The other scenario where we've done it is SQL Server development. Mm-hmm. If you, one of the new features in SQL Server is you can run managed code inside of the SQL Server for user-defined data types and stored procedures. And so there's a project subtype that knows how to, build the assembly on the user's desktop, but then deploy it, install it into the SQL Server, and then launch the code appropriately with the debugger to debug it running inside the SQL Server.
But
and so you could write your own kind of project subtype mm-hmm. using the SDK. If you have some place where you use managed code, maybe you have your own kind of application server or some other kind of environment where, load managed code and as assemblies inside of some specialized environment, it's a great scenario to write your own project subtype that knows about the extra steps and automates it for the user for, the experience of getting that code into the right place and then debugging it. So that's a really interesting.
You get everything you normally would, just custom behaviors on building projects.
Yeah, so this is a case where you're not writing your own language.
Right.
You want the user to use VB or C# or one of the other third-party languages. And yet you want to write this extension to extend to give the experience that's perfect for your server, your runtime, your use of that application, that DLL or whatever. Another scenario. So then you get into scenarios where you are creating. You have your own language, of course. That's a great scenario for vSIP SDK, where you have your own custom language and you want to get the kinds of features like IntelliSense for your language and possibly forms, WinForms hosting or web development. So that's a classic scenario. But then if you look at the non-traditional projects that can be added to Visual Studio, so imagine the team that invented Team System and you're the one who invented the Team Explorer and you have the concept of a team project. That's an example of where it's not a VB or C# project in a solution. It's a whole new space of something that you want to, show this hierarchy in a tool window and from there launch these documents that let you edit information or view information. And it's a whole new space of things. So you could invent your own thing like that.
It might not even be for compiling to a .NET. Solution. It could be just for modeling or something.
Yeah, or monitoring a runtime deployment scenario where your tools to help you monitor a deployed application that has nothing to do with the developing the application, but maybe monitoring and servicing or something. There's infinite possibilities.
You can control the properties on the project as well as the file nodes.
So when you're writing one of these, So writing a traditional project that appears in the solution and writing one of these things that is some advanced thing that is not even in a solution like the Team Explorer or Server Explorer, there's a lot of similarity. So you're writing an object that expresses a hierarchy of nodes, and you control all the semantics. What do you see as icons and captions, and what commands are appropriate? What's the drag drop behavior? What's the context menus and the top level menus? What's the context that you give to the designers and editors that come out of that hierarchy? Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're a language like thing, you perhaps have a programmatic namespace that you build up by examining all the files in your project, and you build up a namespace that gives an IntelliSense experience. Or perhaps you have some other kind of notion of project references, and you can access, you know, project scope data that you make available to your designer experience. You know, dropping controls adds them back to the project. You can invent lots of interesting things. So for some of these non-project, traditional project hierarchies, you know, you might not be based on the file system. You might be, you have your own custom repository or remote system that you want to monitor, and you create a hierarchy of in a tool window that gives you access to documents that you want to edit, and they don't save to the file system. They're not part of a project that builds. You know, think of lifecycle tools that go beyond development time.
Other things you can do with the VS SDK are things like the options pages.
Oh yeah.
Assess them.
So I mean, if you look at all the main pieces of UI. There's the tools options dialog. You can add your own custom tools options pages. You can add your own things to the output window or the task list or the arrow list, the toolbox. You could use the outline, the document outline window.
How about property page stuff?
So if you're a project implementer or a hierarchy implementer, you can, of course, create your own property pages. If you want to add property pages to somebody else's project, that's when you want to do that project subtype scenario that I was talking about. And then there's also possibilities to add, when you select nodes, let's say, in the Solution Explorer, with the properties window that you see, that's not property pages, but the properties window, you can add additional properties that, you know, that aren't coming from the original project implementation, but you can add them yourself there. That's getting into the topic of what's called automation extenders. And then one of the just very interesting things is you can add almost a command anywhere. So if there's somebody has a context menu and you wish you could have a command alongside some other command, you can add it there, and then handle the command and do interesting things.
So a lot of your past, besides working on, you know, the core shell, in terms of working with customers, is companies that are building something that they sell. It has usually a vertical market. Now we're in a space where any .NET developer can extend Visual Studio in any which way for themselves, for other developers, for free, for, you know, CodePlex stuff. So what kind of, you expect to see some cool stuff? I mean...
Oh, we're already seeing cool stuff. If you look at that,
right.
that assist thing that was just written or is being developed on that in the community. I mean, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, there's going to be an explosion, I think, of really cool things. I mean, I'd love to see... I can't believe we don't have this product feature in the product right now, but like diff tools, wind diffing tools, you know, built into the product.
I think a lot, another simple area are things like certain XML file types, like the Whidbey added this ResX editor, it's just XML, and then you can either open the XML or open a visual tool to edit it. You know, maybe web.config, and there's tons of other XML types out there that could have a property type editor.
Yeah, or some other kind of modeling, like designer, like UI or box and line type diagram or something.
Yeah,
I think that's going to be a huge scenario. There's so many interesting XML files that people have created that could have a much better editing experience than, you know, having the user look at XML. And you could write those and do what I would call a custom designer view for an XML file format.
One of the questions...
That you can create those designers and attach them to the schema. So whenever an XML file is opened with your schema attached, then your designer can come into play. Most of the times you have to make a new file extension.
Mm-hmm.
With the XML editor that you helped encourage to happen, that Chris Lovett did, you can create these designers and attach them to the fact that they come into effect when a certain schema XSD is in effect.
A common question is, okay, so we have the VS SDK for 2005, for WIDB, version 4. It's kind of the last major update for the WIDB SDK.
Okay.
And now we're working on the Orcus SDK, and they'll be backward compatible and so forth. Do you see pretty much an easy transition for someone who built something with WIDB? You know, they create a tools window, they add it. Suddenly they grab they install Orcus, they have the Orcus SDK, and they maybe just rebuild it and then take advantage of new things. But do you see that whole experience pretty painless?
I'm hoping for a very painless experience, yeah. I expect that to be. I'm sure you'll have to do maybe open up your project file and fix the paths to the SDK install location. We're making the transition encouraging everyone to make the transition from this old file format that we had called CTC files for creating menus to a new XML-based format called VSCT, and we're going to have tools to make that transition really easy for you. From an API point of view, we're highly compatible. Turn off that thing, it's making noise. We're going to be highly compatible. One of the interesting things we want to support, make it easy for you to develop for your Visual Studio while logged on as a normal user. That's something that I hope to see in the next version of the SDK and of Visual Studio, that we have much better support for not running as administrator. Darn, they really want me.
One of the questions I learned about is, in terms of the history of the shell, is what's inside the IDE, the looping, the message looping, what's this thing that's called Thunder Message Loop?
No. Well, Thunder was the code name of Visual Basic.
Okay.
I think we just...
This is a very old reference, correct?
Yeah.
Old memories?
I think that is just that we inherited some code. So actually, when we started the IDE, we actually cloned the VB code base at the time.
Okay.
And so there's Ruby was the code name of the forms package, and Thunder was a code name for Visual Basic stuff. And so there's some really old things lingering right in there. But that level of the code has been totally reworked now. I think that there isn't any part that you could still point to that is...
Are you one of the few people that have continued giving a presentation in the dark at a conference? Is this the thing? Were you one of the folks that were at this PDC or some tech ad or something where the power went out, but you continued on? Do you remember?
I don't remember that. I don't think I was.
Were you not part of that?
I don't think I was.
Well, then
I was a part of the original Olay PDC.
Yeah.
That was when we introduced Calm and Olay, and that was an interesting PDC.
But how about when a bunch of you guys went to Wing Time and tried this number 7 hot sauce? Were you part of that group?
Oh, yeah, I was with that group, but Jason Weber. He organized, it was after one of our dev labs, and we took a bunch of the partners out to this, was it called Wing Dome?
Yeah.
And they have one of these
hot sauces.
Hot sauces that is, they when you order it, they give you a single wing. Uh-huh. And I abstained from eating
the
wing.
What was the result of people eating number 7?
A lot of sweating, and I don't think everything stayed down.
It's like meeting the man at Dixie?
Yeah, it's just like that, yeah.
Have you heard the term, I provide work items?
Yeah.
What's that?
Yeah, that's my, I don't know if you can focus in on that picture up there.
Who created that?
So that was... When we had a ship party for Visual InterDev 1.0, which was in that VC5 time frame, and at the ship party, which is the party we have when we're celebrating having finished the product, we had a cartoon artist, and they would do caricatures of you. And so, that was my nickname at the time.
I
provide work items. It was a term of endearment, but I tend to generate a lot of ideas and work for other people. So it's a pun on the interface. I VS Shell and I provide work items. So
in terms of the VSX community, just to end on, what would you like to evangelize the community to do with the SDK, and what are you going to push Microsoft internally to do to improve the SDK and the experience when you're developing? Well, those two things.
Well, I'd love to see an explosion of just cool tools that that just increase developer productivity for small teams, large teams, you know, individuals who have just, you know, the thing they do that's repetitive, and boy, wouldn't it be great to have a nice designer for it. Or, you know, so explosion of tools. I'd like to see us push on really focusing on making extensibility easier. And that's why I'm so excited about things like that VS SDK Assist, and leveraging things like the Guidance Automation Toolkit and DSLs. And so I think we need to really push a lot further on making things easy and accessible, a lot more samples, a lot more things like Assist or wizards that help to write a lot of code for you, a lot more, you know, frameworks of great base classes that you can just derive from that do scenarios for you. More tools, like we're coming out with a new tool to help you work with understanding the menus and when you're creating a menus and you're writing a CTC file. Right now it's a black box. You have no idea. When it doesn't work, you have no idea. Did I write the right thing into my CTC file? I don't see my menu. Is it not in my package DLL? Is it not? Did it not get installed properly? You know, tools to make a lot of those things a lot easier. And so I'd love to see an explosion of tools to help VSIP programmers that like this VS SDK Assist. So that would be a great thing for the community, kind of helping ourselves.
And one of the things we'll be doing is more transparency, as in telling the community what we're working on before we actually do it, so that they're more in parallel with our efforts and they can contribute and so forth.
Yep. That's all great. All great stuff.
Well, cool. Thanks, Doug, taking the time to talk to us.
And, well, thanks for this opportunity.
Talk to you later.
All right.